This is the Paula Gordon Show, Conversations with People at the Leading Edge. And certainly Geraldine Brooks is a person who takes us to the leading edge, holds our hands, and we go across together. People of the Book is the specific book that brought you to us, but in as much as I can never resist a good novel, I said, well, she's written one good novel, let's see what the others are. So I inhaled deeply and have enjoyed both. March and Year of Wonders. So I think I've read all of the novels you've written. I'm going to have to wait for the next ones. But what brings it to mind specifically was your title, and as we were talking about librarians, the power of words. And people say, oh, books are going to go away. I don't think so. The power of words, the very technology of a book, I think have a permanence now in the human experience that we walk away from to our peril. Does that seem right to you?
Yes. I hope that the physical book survives because even though I'm not that materialistic, I really do love to own the hardcover books by the authors that I admire, and I just love them as a thing. And I think that it's a pretty fantastic invention, very practical, very portable, it endures. So, you know, why go past it? And a couple of weeks ago, I would have said there was no future for this electronic book. But my husband, Tony Horwitz, had a fellowship at the John Carter Brown Library at Brown University in Providence. And the John Carter Brown Library is nerds on parade. The people there are as serious as you can get.
No card catalog.
And he walked into that room and he saw a whole bunch of people with new Kindles. And he the reporter in him couldn't resist asking, how come? You know, you're a book person. What's with this? And they said, oh, I love books, but my house is almost falling down under the weight of my library. And this is a godsend for the book that you only want to read once.
Well, there's something to that. In terms of thinking about the power of the words that a book carries, and sometimes pictures. When the copy of People of the Book came in, I leapt to the conclusion, jumped to my own stereotype, that this would be about the Talmud. That this would be, okay, People of the Book, it's going to be about Jews and the Talmud. And how do we say that correctly? The Hebrew Bible. And of course it wasn't. But that's part of the delight of you pull me in.
But it is a remarkable midrash.
Yes, indeed, it is a midrash, another interesting concept and storytelling medium that I've only come fairly recently to understand as a teaching tool. This whole business about the richness of words and the way that we are carried by our stories. America needs more good stories, even if they're not happy endings. This happens to come out quite nicely in terms of happy endings. But that's not what you set out to do.
Well, for some of them it does, and for some of them
are not so good.
Depending on which point in the story, specifically.
Don't stop till you get to the end.
The Haggadah is okay.
Yes, the book makes it. So.
Yeah, and the book would have made it had it stopped at any of those points.
The book is the survivor,
And the book could have, in a sense, survived even if the physical object had not, because it is a strong story that itself carried.
Oh, yes, but boy, we'd be the poorer for it, because what makes this book so remarkable is its thingness. Mm-hmm. You can feel the intention of the scribe, the sofer, who is a religious man whose role in life is to write holy Hebrew. You can feel the intensity of creative power of the artist who did the illuminations in this book, which makes it such an extraordinary rarity, because at that time it was very unusual for any Hebrew book to have figurative art because of the commandment, thou shalt not make graven images.
Which is a parallel to the Islamic experience where you also don't do
exactly.
Images.
That's a very serious prohibition in Islam, and was among the Puritans in this country too. They were not crazy about making likenesses. So
I stopped you in your progression. Mm-hmm. We would not have had that same sense coming out of the experience that book had as it traveled with individuals and was enriched by their experiences.
There are a million Haggadot in the world.
Plural?
Yes. And each of them is very recognizable and the stories are very similar. But this one is unique. So
specifically, tell us what the function of this book is.
Well, Haggadah is used at the Jewish Passover festival. It's a book to be used at home at the dinner table when you have the ritual meal at which Jews everywhere remember the liberation of their people from slavery in Egypt. And so it tells that story, but it tells it in a particular way with a lot of symbolism that has to be explained, because the idea of the Seder meal is to teach your children about this momentous time in Jewish history, the progression from slavery to freedom.
Teaching the children is an important concept.
Absolutely. And when I had to come up with a plausible explanation as to why this particular book was illustrated when hardly any other Hebrew books extant from that time were. And so I was thinking about the role of the Passover meal as a pedagogic experience, mm-hmm. and that plays a part in the explanation that I came up with.
We have a good friend who's a philosopher. His core philosophy is he says that the meaning of being a human is the creation of beauty. And that's what he's gotten, has worked his way to going back, and he's a wonderful mm-hmm. scholar of Western philosophy. He doesn't have any claim to the Eastern perspective. And he goes on to say there is no beauty without its opposite, without mm-hmm. ugliness. But I think of it in this context because he also talks about the avatars of ugliness, what he characterizes as Vandals and Philistines. Mm-hmm. The Philistines just, they won't maintain things. They have bad taste. They're lazy. They're sloppy. They pour wine on their books. The Vandals are actively destructive. And the story, and it comes to mind in this context because the history of this book, as you tell it, is there's this beacon of beauty, which is the book itself, and then there are all these vandals in various forms around it who are committed to the destruction of beauty, usually with some orthodoxy, some ideology behind it. But the overwhelming commitment is to the destruction of beauty and the humans that go with it. And to me, you've wound together a wonderful series of metaphorical experiences that describe that, and again, describe it in ways that are relevant to what we deal with now.
Well, one of the little byways that my research took me down was looking at the Islamic view of image making. As you said, Muslims don't favor figurative art, generally speaking, and actually, in the medieval period, the iconoclasts, the idol smashers, defaced a lot of books, but they did it in a very particular way, because the real issue in Islam is that you're not supposed to be competing with the creator. So you mustn't do anything that looks like it's supposed to be alive. It's okay to have plant forms and abstract designs, and there's great, great beauty in Islamic art, but it's all non-figurative. And so what the iconoclasts would do is they would try and get their hands on some of the beautiful Persian miniatures and other wonderful art that was created within a Muslim context. And if there were people in those miniatures, they would draw a little red slash across their throat, effectively killing them, robbing them of life. So if they were dead people, then that was okay.
But we saw that in Egypt.
Well, you reported for a while from the Middle East and spent mm-hmm. time in Cairo, and I'm sure you had the experience of going in to these beautiful, mini millennial places.
Six or seven.
More than I can count. Yeah. And seeing these wonderful works of art that had been literally defaced.
Oh, yes.
The face was taken away.
The face was taken off. Yeah. The rest of it was there, so you could imagine. I mean, you could get a sense of
it. Well, and you see the Taliban doing that to Buddhist statues in the last decade, so it's not like this is ancient history.
And to a lot of paintings in the Kabul Museum. There was a very brave curator there that managed to save some of the collection, but they were out for anything that was too representational.
I you forced me.
Gently.
No, you took me by the throat and made me revisit the Inquisition, which to me is one of the great horrors of European so-called civilization, and certainly to me an affront to everything that Jesus at least represented. And I couldn't remember, so I went and put in Inquisition and apology in my search engine to see what would come up. And it was startling to me because the first page were essentially was mostly given over to deniers and arguments with deniers, people who say that either it was a Protestant conspiracy that's been promulgated, or it was not as bad as advertised. It was only a few thousand people, after all, that got burned. Or that it met the standards of behavior of that time period. Now, this is 400 or 500 years, or 500 to 700 years, depending on how you count it, of Inquisition. But I found it remarkable. And again, it goes back to this, you know, this mirror that you keep holding up, going back from 1492 to today.
And it's important to say that Pope Benedict came to being pope from being at the head of the church's office that they changed his name, but it's the Inquisition.
It's so the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith.
Thank you.
But I don't say that to necessarily attack the Catholic Church, because the Catholic Church has, in some way, the Church itself has at least issued an apology. People quibble about how sincere and how, you know, the wording of it, and I'm sure the translations have something to do with it. But there are a tremendous number of people out there. And this, in a way, goes to Sarajevo. You know, it had nothing to do with religion. It's just religion was the excuse. But there are a lot of people who take, if you will, the iconography, the symbols, and twist them to their own purposes, and simply refuse to see the world in what I would view as, for want of a better word, an enlightened way.
We will be back, having given Geraldine Brooks a moment to think about that, when we return. Please be with us.